This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is made possible in part each Wednesday by People's United Bank. Find out what know-how can do, a better business relationship. By Business Energy Action, challenging businesses to reduce energy consumption. It's just good business. By Fairpoint Communications, small business owners make it big with Fairpoint. By Fletcher Allen Healthcare, in service to the patient, community, and medicine since 1879. And by National Life Insurance, for more than 150 years, working for a better tomorrow. And by the over 1,000 VBSR members. Here's noted Vermont author David Goodman.
And good afternoon. This is Dan Barlow. I'm guest hosting for David Goodman. Welcome to the Vermont Conversation on WDEV. I'm here in the studio with Ann Galloway, who is the editor of vtdigger.org, a fantastic online news source, certainly the first place I go to every morning to find out what's happening in Vermont and especially within the State House in Montpelier. Welcome to the show, Ann.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me.
So I want to start off with you telling us a little bit about VT Digger, what exactly you guys do, and your history.
Sure. Just briefly, we cover the State House and state government. We're kind of a watchdog news organization in that we keep tabs on what government's doing and what it says it's going to be doing and what politicians say it should be doing. And we also cover business. We have four reporters in the State House plus myself, and they all have beats. It's a little bit old-fashioned. We have one reporter just covers healthcare, another covers energy and the environment, business, criminal justice, and then my specialty is the state budget and tax policy.
And I think with four reporters in the building, probably gives you the biggest group of reporters from any organization in Vermont in the building, or incorrect in that?
No, you're right about that, but I was just talking to Hillary Niles, our business reporter, about how frustrated I am that, oh, we just aren't covering enough.
You could have 100 reporters and there's still stuff to cover in that building.
Yeah, and she said, well, you know, they do outnumber us.
You need one reporter for every legislator in the building. Maybe every lobbyist, too. So.
Oh, my goodness.
This is lawmakers returned to Montpelier yesterday after a week town meeting break. So we're roughly at the midpoint of this legislative session, and this is a week that's called crossover in the building. Can you talk a little bit about what that means and, you know, what the atmosphere in the State House is this week?
Sure. Crossover is basically the last chance lawmakers have to pass a bill out of committee, and then it can be taken up on the floor of that body. So the House, if they pass a bill out of committee, they can take it up, and then it could actually go to the Senate. But if it doesn't get out of committee, it doesn't go anywhere. So the lawmakers are really scrambling between now and Friday at 4:30 to really get everything they can out the door. Now, that does not include, of course, the money bills. Anything that regarding tax or the budget will be coming out next week. The deadline is next Friday. But what's a little tricky about that, of course, is that sometimes lawmakers are trying to do both. They're trying to work through any financial pieces that might be attached to a bill at the same time that they're dealing with policy. So the mood in the building actually, I think, is fairly cheerful. I think that they're really being quite decisive about some of these issues that have come up, and they're trying to get bills out the door, and they seem to be productive. There is some floor work, but mostly it's all in committee, so...
So this is really the do-or-die week for some bills in the legislature. Their fate will be determined by Friday afternoon.
That's right. And, of course, their fate was sort of partially determined prior to this by leadership and by the governor. But, yes, there's still this chance that rank-and-file members can try to get their own bills passed. And so you have individual lawmakers from the House going to other, you know, from one committee going to another, presenting bills, and same in the Senate. And that's kind of fun because typically lawmakers it's sort of like homeroom in a school. You know, they stay in their committees all the time. They're sort of cloistered in the committees, except for when they're on the floor and, of course, eating lunch. But, you know, this is an opportunity for them to really take an issue they care about passionately and make a pitch to the Committee of Jurisdiction.
And have there been any casualties so far? Any bills that didn't make it to the end of the week and therefore done to the end of the session so far?
Well, yes. There was a bill last evening yesterday morning, I'm sorry, that had to do with raising the age for buying cigarettes. George Till, who's a doctor from Jericho Underhill area, wanted to get this bill passed. He had some other sponsors, but basically it would have raised the age in which you could purchase cigarettes from 18 to 21. And he thinks that this would be a great way to curb teen smoking because 18-year-olds tend to buy smokes for their friends who are younger. And you know, there's statistics that show that if you start when you're really young, you'll continue for the rest of your life. And this is a huge expense to the state. We spend something like $200 million a year in Medicaid on lung disease-related health costs. So, at any rate, this bill was completely trounced yesterday by House Human Services. They killed it, 11-0.
Wow.
And this was after Dr. Harry Chen came in and testified against the bill, which is kind of surprising. Ann Pugh, who's the chair of the committee, also cited the Centers for Disease Control recommendations, and this wasn't on their list of top things to do. And Human Services had just passed a bill recently that basically outlaws secondhand smoke in certain situations, especially for children. It outlaws adult smoking in a vehicle with a child.
And I think that bill also, which the committee did pass, and I think the House has passed it as well, outlawed smoking in hotels and motels, right? Is that, I think it's ending that long tradition of having a smoking room in a hotel.
That's right. That's right. And it also set up a perimeter around state buildings. So you're not allowed to smoke right outside the door of a state building.
Mm-hmm. My name is Dan Barlow. I'm the public policy manager with Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. You are listening to the Vermont Conversation on WDEV. We are taking calls today. So if you want to join this conversation and let us know what you think about what's happening at the State House, if there are any issues you want to see the legislature focus on or maybe not work on this year, please let us know. The numbers to call in is 244-1777 or 1-877-291-8255. And I'm here in the studio in Waterbury with Ann Galloway from VT Digger. I wanted to transition over to an issue that kind of hit the State House within the last 2 weeks or so, and that's a minimum wage increase.
Sure.
You know, I know this is something that VBSR does support, and we were actually, I think, us and many other people were kind of surprised that this was suddenly put on the agenda so late in the session. The governor announced that he does support a 10-10 minimum wage, stepped up over 3 years until 2017. This is the same plan that the president has put on the table in the State of the Union address, and I think some other New England governors are also working on the same thing. What are you hearing about this issue, and where will it land, will it be held to this, you know, Friday crossover?
Well, it is supposed to be. I do think that they're going to try to tackle it before the end of the week, although I haven't seen it on the agenda in the Committee of Jurisdiction, which is the House General. So I'm not quite sure what's happening with it. I know that Helen Head, who's the chair of that committee, along with a number of other lawmakers, were very involved with the paid sick leave bill. And I think there's some ambivalence now because I think they really hope to get that. The bill passed out of committee 6-1, and I think they really had high hopes that they'd be able to vote on the floor on that soon. So I'm not really sure what's going to happen with it. I did go to the press conference yesterday with Governor Madeline Cunin and the lawmakers who were advocating for this. I have heard in the building that the governor went ahead with this proposal for the minimum wage because this was an easier sell to the business community than the paid sick leave bill, because what I'm hearing from insiders is that the earned sick leave or paid sick leave bill is too broad, some people are saying, and phasing in the minimum wage might be more palatable. Mm-hmm. Plus, it's something that the president has advocated for. It's very straightforward. And I think that there was more anxiety about paid sick leave.
And that committee, I mean, spent several weeks working on the paid leave bill and had a big public hearing, you know, several days of testimony, probably heard from dozens and dozens of witnesses. And there's been one afternoon hearing on minimum wage so far. Do you see this bill going forward? If you had a crystal ball, if you dare look into that crystal ball, do you think Vermont will pass a minimum wage increase by the end of the year, or is this kind of in doubt right now?
I think they'll do something in committee before the end of the week, and so it'll have a chance of passing at some point in the House, probably. I'm hearing that it'll start in the House. Yeah. there's no predicting. They may use it as a chit at the end to bargain with the governor.
Yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me at all, given the way things are going. So since it's something he's declared that he wants, it's fair game.
You hinted at something just now that you wrote about, I think, in Digger today, and that's the relationship between the governor and the legislature right now. And everyone knows, you know, leadership, both the governor and the House and Senate, is all from the same party. Despite that, they don't always see eye to eye on some issues. Can you talk about what the relationship is right now between the legislature and the governor?
Sure. I mean, I think in general, it's important to, I think, understand that the Democratic Party now is so big. It's a very, very large tent, and they've absorbed a lot of progressives, too. Not literally, but figuratively they have. I mean, progressives are now working more with Democratic leadership than they have in the past. And so you really have a very wide range of views in the Democratic Party, ranging from, you know, as far left as you can get to someone who's pretty far right, like Dick Mazza. I'm trying to think of a good example on the left. Maybe Cynthia Browning. Mm. She can go either way, right?
Yeah.
She can flip either way. You know, Chris Pearson's a progressive, but he's probably further left than some people. Paul Poirier can be fairly on the left side of the line. And so their relationship with the governor is fairly dynamic. But I think there's a lot of frustration after last year because I think a lot of lawmakers feel that the governor didn't respect their work. They spent months working on a revenue proposal that they thought was solid. And this was at a time when the governor had essentially pitched a couple of fairly, what many view as hollow plans for revenues, namely the break open tickets and a raid on the earned income tax credit program. And so lawmakers made a very serious effort to take a hard look at the adjusted gross income shift. You know, our income taxes are based on taxable income. And then they also looked at a minimum tax for people who are in the wealthiest tax break bracket. And anyway, a wide variety of things. They worked quite hard on it. They wanted it to be very fair. And then when conference committee time came around, the Senate and the House didn't quite agree. And then the governor said, lo and behold, we can make it. We don't need any tax increases. Everything's going to be fine. And I think that there's still a bad taste in the mouths of those who were involved in this process, because I think there is a firm belief among some that the state is not generating enough revenue on an annual basis to cover the cost of government. I mean, year after year after year, we have these $60 to $70 to $80 million budget gaps. This year is no different. We have $70 million. And I just talked to some folks at the Joint Fiscal Office this morning, and it looks like we're going to be in the same boat next year. Hmm. And so I think there's a lot of concern about the long-term strategy for meeting the state's costs. So that's one thing that happened last year that I think is still having an impact now. And I think there's some cynicism about the governor's decision not to talk about the financing plan. And you're hearing this, I think, across the board. It's not just Republicans who are complaining quietly. I think Democrats are also a little bit annoyed because they've been spending a lot of time, Senate Finance, House Ways and Means, really taking a look at the payroll you know, what the payroll tax base is, other ways of raising funds for a plan that across the board they really believe in and they want to support, they want to do due diligence, they want taxpayers to feel good about this project. And it's a big one coming on the heels of the Vermont Health Exchange, which has been a bit of a debacle. Yeah. So they want to be extra careful that it's done right. And it's been difficult, I think, for them to deal with the uncertainty.
And so let me back up a little bit. You're talking about the single-payer Green Mountain Care financing. The legislature expected the governor to maybe put out some options at one point later this session. I remember Michael Costa saying after town meeting, the governor will engage on this issue. And it seemed like that rhetoric shifted a little bit in recent weeks. I remember Michael telling House Healthcare that they're concentrating on doing it right, not doing it fast. And then lo and behold, a few days later, the governor tells Vermont Public Radio that he will not be putting out any plans, I think, this year. Any idea when we might see these plans or any thoughts about what led to the governor making this decision?
There's this thing called a general election. I just think that they want to wait until January because whatever they propose is going to be controversial. Not proposing is controversial. Everything about this is controversial. So, you know, I think that they want to keep it as quiet as possible. But it's kind of unfortunate because it takes lawmakers a while to figure things out. And it's not because they're slow. It's because they're deliberate. And they have an oversight role to play. And they take that seriously. And so to have a very short window in which to make these decisions, I think, will be frustrating for them. I think you'll see the Senate Finance Committee and House Ways and Means, though, continue to bring Michael in to talk to Al Gobay from the Green Mountain Care Board. They'll bring the insurers in. They'll continue this conversation, but not having anything meaty to work with is probably a little disappointing for everybody.
Yeah. So Senate Finance Committee has been working on Senator Galbraith's original bill that he introduced, I think. I'm not sure if it was this year or maybe last year. And that was a financing bill that pretty much focused on a payroll tax on employers and employees to fund single payer. I think he was using the $1.6 billion number at the time, and estimates are a little higher than that now. Do you see them passing a bill on financing the legislature this year or advancing it out of committee, or are they kind of using this as a vehicle to have this discussion, to begin these deliberations, setting up more action in 2015?
I think it's the latter, Dan. I think they're just using this as a straw vehicle for, you know, taking a look at the issue. I don't think they're going to pass anything out of committee, but anything's possible, but it's not like the House would approve it, so.
Yeah. And, you know, what I'm hearing, and I'm sure you're hearing the same thing, is like a grumbling from the legislature that the timeline that's been on the table is not appropriate for them. As you said, that they want to do their due diligence, and they're not sure if, you know, the 2015 session, the 4 or 5 months that they have there, is enough time to kind of crack this big walnut that they're going to be given. You know, I think we're going to see this play out next year. But do you see any scenario where the governor puts options on the table before the election or out? Do you think it's going to be after the election?
Oh, I do.
Yeah. And of course, he doesn't have an opponent yet, right, in this election.
That helps him.
I mean, have you heard anything from the Republican Party about who might be on that?
No, your guess is as good as mine.
Yeah, there are a lot of guesses out there. So
I wish I could be more definitive. I wish I could break some news for you today, Dan.
I'm trying. Also, over the town meeting break, we saw a lot of school budgets go down. You know, I live in Montpelier, and I can say a lot of people are pretty surprised to see the Montpelier school budget go down. And also, our neighbors in Barrie, their school budget went down, and then in Burlington as well. So you had this, at least, you know, for the State House, this kind of trifecta of big school budgets surrounding the State House go down. What impact did it have when lawmakers returned to the State House this week? I mean, how does that change some of the bills in play at the State House?
Well, I've been watching the property tax bill, which is in House Ways and Means right now. They're finalizing it, actually, this afternoon, so I can break some news.
Oh,
So I don't know how exciting it is, but they took testimony from Steve Dale, the head of the School Boards Association, and they learned that 25% of students in Vermont attend schools in which a school budget was rejected. So that's kind of an interesting statistic. There were 35 budgets that went down statewide. They're very concerned about the pain that taxpayers are feeling. And they're working very hard to bring what was going to be a 7-cent increase down to 5 cents. So it's still going to be tough for people because we had a 5-cent increase this past year. So it's still 5 cents on top of that, but it could be worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're also tweaking a number of aspects of the property tax bill. They're changing the excess spending cap. It'll be tied to inflation instead of school budget levels. And they're also going to be changing the per pupil reimbursement rate. They're going to be raising that, so that'll make it a little bit easier for some schools. They'll be eliminating the small schools grant, which is about $7.7 million over a three-year period. And that's really what's kept a lot of schools on life support. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be, I think, really difficult for schools. They're also changing the formula for what's known as the ghost student. As enrollments declined, you know, we had a 20% enrollment decline over a 15-year period. The state had this little mechanism in place that protected schools from a precipitous drop in 1 year. So if you had 10% of your kids leave in 1 year, you only had to claim 3.5% had actually left. So that means that there were students that were left on the books that the state's actually reimbursing for who don't exist.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know about this ghost student thing, but it's kind of big.
Do you see the issue over property taxes and education funding playing out in the election this year?
Yeah.
What are the sides going to be on this one? I mean, it seems like, you know, Democrat and Republicans have very vastly different ideas. And even within their own parties, there's a lot of different ideas about how to tackle this issue.
I don't know how they'll tackle it, but I know that, you know, Patty Comline and Heidi Sherman, two Republican reps in the House, have proposed a repeal of Act 60 and 68. So I think you'll see in gold towns that have higher property values, that old saw will come back. People will begin hating on Act 60 and Act 68 again the way they did before. Although the fact of the matter is that the tax rate pain is spread across towns. It's not just the rich towns anymore that are feeling it. So I think it's going to be tough because the governor has set up this schools kind of as a battleground. That's what I heard one very prominent senator express to me today, was that she was concerned that by essentially telling school board members to cut budgets, and that would solve the problem. And then it sort of has come out that that's not entirely the problem, that the state has been eroding the education fund through a variety of ways, and that has also added up to anywhere from 4 to 7 cents on the property tax rate, depending on how you look at it. I think that now Montpelier is being blamed for the problems. And I don't know how you solve it. You can't really tinker with the system. On the other hand, it's vital that the state abide by the Brigham decision.
Yep.
Keep a level playing field. We're the only state in the country that has a statewide property tax, and that enables all students to get an adequate education. But it is tricky.
Yeah.
I don't know how. I think it could be bitter, and I think that some reps could face some competition in their local districts. It could be tough.
Yep. You are listening to the Vermont Conversation on WDEV. I am Dan Barlow. I'm the Public Policy Manager with Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. We will be taking some calls during this show, so you can join the conversation at 244-1777. I'm here in the studio in Waterbury with Ann Galloway, the editor of vtdigger.org, and we are talking about the Vermont legislative session. They are about half over. I anticipate that they'll be heading home sometime in early May, probably. Anne, do you think that'll be a good bet?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they want to get out there and go campaign, right?
They do.
What the pressure is here during an election year. So please call in if you have some thoughts about what the legislature should be focusing on in the last 2 months or so of the session, or maybe things that you don't want them to focus on. The number is 244-1777. Anne, I want to go back to, we talked about the minimum wage, and I think we're going to break for commercials, and we'll be right back. So hold that thought.
I'm Rick from Auto Extreme. Since Jamie and I launched our multi-million dollar multinational ad campaign, I had a call from a guy named Pierre the other day. Things sure have been great at Auto Extreme. In fact, I have him out on the road right now buying the best pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs just to keep up with demand. And while Jamie's out, I thought I'd surprise him by sprucing up the lot with a few new hood signs. Maybe tomorrow I'll get some balloons or one of those floppy air-filled guys to catch your eye as you're driving by 186 River Street in Montpelier. We sure have created some happy customers with our no-pressure sales approach and high-quality vehicles, like a need-a-good car from East Overshoe. Or how about crispy bacon of Freiburg? Oh, good, here comes Jamie now. Hey, partner, what do you think of my new hood signs?
They look great, Rick, but why do they spell SEAL? S-E-A-L?
Oh, man.
Just another month of bathroom duty, buddy, so stop by and see the great selection of vehicles and even greater deals at Auto Extreme, or visit us on the web at AUTOXTREMEVT.com, where we put the fun back into car buying.
Hey, Jibs, have you seen the plunger?
AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire. Two apartment buildings have been reduced to rubble by a powerful explosion in a New York City neighborhood. At least two people are dead, 18 others injured. Mayor Bill de Blasio.
There are a number of missing individuals, and there's going to be a thorough search to try and find or locate each individual.
Kathy Smith, who lives in the neighborhood, tells WABC-TV.
I heard the explosion, and I looked. I thought it was much closer than it was because the suction from my windows like and went back out.
The blast was so strong it shattered windows and buildings all around the area. One resident of the building says he heard the news of the blast and hurried back, only to find his home reduced to just a bunch of bricks and wood. A Con Edison official says two crews were on their way to the neighborhood after a resident of another apartment building reported smelling gas. They got there just after the explosion. AP Update. I'm Tim McGuire.
Cancer is a disease that affects us all. This year, over 1.8 million people will be diagnosed with cancer, almost three times the population of Vermont. Hi, this is Dave Birmingham from Twin City Subaru, 802 Toyota, and 802 Honda. We all know someone who's been affected by cancer, maybe even you. The good news is we can all help. The American Cancer Society's Relay for Life Nordic Style is coming up, and we're proud to be a sponsor. The event is March 22nd at the Trapp Family Lodge in Stowe. You can snowshoe, cross-country ski, or walk to support this great cause. You can also have some fun and escape the dreaded cabin fever. The American Cancer Society helps so many people in Vermont. Most importantly, they support research to help find a cure. Two out of three people are surviving cancer, but until everyone survives, we need to keep searching for a cure. Help us finish the fight. To donate or join this event, go to relayforlife.org/NordicStyleVT, because cancer never takes a break. VTCars.com is proud to support Relay for Life Vermont.
Looking for a loan for your Vermont business, childcare, or nonprofit organization? Look at the Vermont Community Loan Fund. Because at the Vermont Community Loan Fund, we lend to Vermont businesses and nonprofits, even if the bank says you're not quite ready for a loan. At the Vermont Community Loan Fund, we focus on people, not profits. We'll work closely with you before and after you get your loan to make sure you get what you need to succeed. The Vermont Community Loan Fund makes loans to early stage companies and established businesses ready to take the next step. We lend to farms and food producers, high-tech businesses, manufacturers, retailers, childcare businesses, affordable housing developers, service providers, and other nonprofit organizations. We make loans to Vermonters doing business right here at home and around the world. So if you're looking for financing to help your growing business, look at the Vermont Community Loan Fund. Visit us online at investinvermont.org. That's investinvermont.org.
Our service department is growing every day, and it's because of our loyal customers, and I want to say thank you. Hi, I'm Jack Castellaneta, Vice President at Formula Nissan. Here are three reasons to do your service with us. Number one, at Formula Nissan, there is no appointment necessary, so whether it's an emergency or just an oil change, we'll fit you in. Number two, Formula Nissan services all makes and models. We do brakes, tires, batteries, alignments, suspension, and more, and along with a free 27-point inspection. Number three, Formula Nissan service specials. For the month of March, to combat all those potholes, a four-wheel alignment for $59.95 and 10% off all suspension work. Formula Nissan next to Panera Bread on the Barrie Montpelier Road. Open on Saturdays and 24/7 at formulanissan.com. Come in, no appointment necessary. Ask for Seth or Jamie in service and let them show you how easy it is to do business here.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility makes the Vermont Conversation with David Goodman available each Wednesday, along with People's United Bank. Find out what know-how can do. A better business relationship. National Life Insurance, for more than 150 years working for a better tomorrow. Fletcher Allen Healthcare, in service to the patient, community, and medicine since 1879. Fairpoint Communications, small business owners make it big with Fairpoint. And Business Energy Action, challenging businesses to reduce energy consumption. It's just good business. As well as over 1,000 plus VBSR members.
And welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. David Goodman is not here today. I am Dan Barlow. I am the public policy manager with Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. For those wondering what a public policy manager is, it's a nice way to say lobbyist. I'm the guy in the building for VBSR working on our legislative agenda. I'm here in the Waterbury studio with Ann Galloway, the editor of vtdigger.org, and we are talking about the legislative session. There are only about 2 months left of this year. We're at the halfway point in the session. We're kind of walking through some the big issues the legislature is looking at, and when we before we broke for commercials, we were talking about the school budget votes in town meeting, and there's also some work going on about consolidating school districts. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. House Education has proposed an education governance plan that would reduce the state's 282 school districts down to 60, and essentially what that means is that there would be fewer school board members and fewer school boards. Right now, we have 1,440 school board members, more than any other state in the union.
Wow.
Big surprise, right? in fact, we're radically kind of overgoverned if you compare us to other states. So
it's interesting, you know. I did not grow up in Vermont. I'm very happy the state has adopted me. But you know, one thing I noticed right away is that within communities, if you're active in your community, probably at some point you end up serving on your local school board. It's what happens when you live in these small towns. So is this? Can you give us a lay of the land on this bill? Is this something that's going to move forward? Does this have a lot of support within the legislature?
Well, I think that there's some support for it. I think that lawmakers are sort of in a holding pattern. They want to see what's going to happen. They're worried about all those school board members and what their reaction might be. The Vermont School Boards Association is holding a series of hearings around the state over the next 2 weeks. And lawmakers put off a hearing they were going to have in Rutland on Monday because they're in a wait-and-see mode. That said, it is crossover week. And if they don't get it done by Friday, they have to ask for an exemption, which is fairly rare. They are working on it in House Education, and I think they'll attempt to pass something out of committee today or tomorrow. But it's a tough thing because lawmakers are very close to their constituents, especially the reps. And so they're talking about essentially eliminating community positions that many of their friends and acquaintances might hold. Local control is something people feel very passionately about. And people feel even more passionately about their schools. And so some people see education governance consolidation as a potential way of ultimately closing some schools around the state. And so there's a lot of fear around it.
Yep.
And even though it's really a four-year process and it would be gradual, and local school districts would be very involved in the process, because it's coming from Montpelier, it's scary.
I wanted to transition back. We talked about the minimum wage earlier in the show, and you mentioned the paid sick days, or the paid leave bill, as VBSR likes to call it. You know, and can you talk a little bit about what happened with the paid leave bill and its relationship to the minimum wage proposal that the governor has put on the table?
Well, I'm not really quite sure what the calculation was that the governor made, except that, like I said before, I think the paid sick leave bill is seen as a broader series of rules that small businesses would have to follow. There was a lot of resistance to it from the Contractors Association, from the Grocers Association, the Retail Association, and so on.
We felt a little alone out there.
Did you?
We were the sole business group to support this one. So
really? Yeah, I know the Chamber came down on it too. So
Yeah.
I think again, what's different about it is it has to do with work rules and work policy. And employers, I think, sometimes feel very vulnerable in that area because it's a little bit muddy.
Yeah.
And you might have an employee who isn't willing to come to work on a regular basis and who is using the rules to abuse an employer's goodwill. So there is some apprehension that's warranted there. But by the same token, the arguments that Madeline Kunin and others made yesterday, Jennifer Kimmich, is that how you pronounce your last name, from The Alchemist, and other women who showed up at the presser yesterday, including Representative Johanna Donovan, all said, you know, it's the 21st century. Why are we essentially abiding by 19th century rules? Why is this so traditional? Why do we just assume that mommy's going to be home to take care of a sick child? Everybody's working now, and if you happen to be a single mother, you're going to be working and you're going to have no backstop at home.
Yeah.
So I think they made a very passionate plea to lawmakers and to the governor to consider this really as an issue that affects women particularly. Of course, it affects men too. But businesses would have an exemption. Businesses with fewer than 5 employees would not have to abide by this new rule. And I think that Helen Head, the chair of House General, feels that they have made an effort to be fair to businesses. And so I think they're a little perplexed as to why the governor made this an either-or proposition.
Yeah, I totally see that. You know, I know from VBSR's perspective, you know, we know that the workforce has changed and family dynamics have changed, and we felt that regulations and workplace practices just haven't kept up with those changes in society. And, you know, we do have a kind of a sense that when the child gets sick, it's always the mom who stays home with it and that with the child. And that's not fair. You know, I think, honestly, you know, having paid leave available to all workers in Vermont would actually give, I think, some coverage for men to stay home sometimes with the sick kids, is it shouldn't always fall on the responsibility of the mother. And as soon as sometimes we have that framework for an issue like that. And you had an interesting anecdote in your piece this morning about crossover, about the relationship between Governor Kunin and Governor Shumlin, which I actually didn't know about. Could you share a little bit of that?
Sure. Madeline Kunin appointed Peter Shumlin to his House seat when he was 24 years old.
Wow.
And it was funny because yesterday one of the reporters, Paul Hines from 7 Days, said, he asked the lawmakers if they felt abandoned, and I just thought it was funny that Madeline Kunin didn't say it, that he asked that question basically of Madeline Kunin as well. And she said, well, I'm not going to talk about that.
I'm reading both of Governor Keenan's books right now.
Oh, are you really?
Living a Political Life, her autobiography, which is really fascinating. And actually, for me, I'm finding a lot to identify with it at times. Hmm. But I'm also reading her new book, The New Feminist Agenda. Hmm. And in the beginning of that book, she reflects on, you know, working on some of these issues 30, 40 years ago. During the women's liberation movement. And, you know, back then she would, you know, project herself in the future and say, oh, by the time I'm 80 years old, which is her age right now, that these will all be worked out. And her own shock and discomfort to realize that over, you know, 30, 40 years, we haven't made the progressions that she thought we would back then. So it's been, it's a really interesting read, and I highly encourage people to read both books. And we're really lucky to have Governor Keenan with us here in Vermont still. I want to switch over to opiate addiction. This was Governor Shumlin's centerfold of his state address earlier this year. What's happening in the building, and does this still kind of have the same energy behind it that it did back in January when he put this on the table?
Well, the opiate bill that's now in the Senate has really been the focus of Senate Judiciary. It's really Dick Sears' bill, and he's been it's been all-encompassing. He's been involving the state's attorneys and the defender general and the sheriffs and police departments around the state. And I think the sense at this point is that the rapid intervention program that T.J. Donovan has pioneered in Chittenden County is still the best method going forward. And they essentially want to give all state's attorneys the opportunity to try something similar. There's a very small budget item for this project. It's only about $765,000. And I was in House Appropriations this morning, and they decided that it was a good idea to spend money on that. So that's a go. But basically, they're going to be using that money to hire court minders, in a sense, people who are there to work with defendants who are diverted from the court system, from jail, and to ensure that they get the treatment they need. Mm. And they'll actually have to check up on them to see whether or not they've gone through with treatment. And if folks don't go through these various programs, they'll end up being charged one way or the other. And it'll differ county to county as to how this will play out. But essentially, that's how it would work.
Mm-hmm. And this seems like a must-pass bill, for at least for the governor, definitely by the end of the session this year, right?
Yes, and I don't sense that there's any resistance to it in the legislature. I know that House Judiciary is fully prepared to take it up. They'll take more testimony, of course, but Senator Sears has made his mission in life to perfect this bill. He's been working on it since day one. It hasn't passed out of committee yet. It probably will today or tomorrow.
Yeah, I know from knowing Senator Sears for a long time, this issue and other kind of, you know, law enforcement issues and drug addiction issues are kind of near and dear to his heart. It's been a focus of a lot of his work over the past few years. Another bill that is in Senator Sears' committee is the GMO labeling bill. This bill passed the House last year. I think it was a 99-41 vote, I believe. We're hoping for that 100 votes, but I think someone was absent. A supporter was absent, but what can you do? So this bill would require all food labeled has genetic engineering ingredients to be labeled as such that when it's sold in Vermont. You know, Maine and Connecticut have passed similar bills, but the focus in the building right now is whether or not our bill should have what's called a trigger in there, whether or not this would take effect upon passage, or it would rely on other states to also pass similar bills in New England. And can you talk a little bit about, because all the focus right now is a concern over will Vermont get sued if we pass this bill. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, we've been sued a few times.
We haven't had the best track record of late.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think that there is this, the Vermont exceptionalism comes into play here. We think differently than people in the rest of the country. And so you see attempts to put a kibosh on drug companies that want to fuel a lot of money into medical practices and that kind of thing. You saw an idealistic attempt to put restrictions on campaign spending. And then, of course, we've been sued by Entergy a few times. So I think lawmakers are a little nervous about the Attorney General's budget, and they don't want to pass laws that might get the state into trouble. And so that's why the GMO labeling bill is giving people heart palpitations in the building.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe the AG has estimated it might take between $5 and $10 million to defend this suit if Vermont passes it and if we are sued. And that number depends on whether we do win or lose. But I mean, that's real. That's, you know, you're talking about, you know, the legislature scraping up enough money for the opiate program.
Right.
And $5 to $10 million is a lot of money compared to, you know, what they're operating with in the building right now.
Sure. That's why they might say, oh, let California do it first. They've got the money.
We were hoping California could do it first, but that ballot initiative didn't really go the way we wanted to. Just a few other issues before we start wrapping up. One of the bills that I believe did die this week was the plastic bag bill, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that? It seems like this bill comes up every few years in the legislature.
It does. It's another one of those get-rich schemes, I think, that the that the legislature puts out there every once in a while. The idea is that they charge 10 cents a bag, and the Grocers Association really didn't like this bill. Some people are saying that the grocers have made a great effort to try to recycle bags and also try to encourage people to bring their own grocery bags in cloth, of the cloth variety. And so it just didn't go anywhere. The Senate Natural Resources Committee trashed it yesterday.
Is that going to be the headline on Digger tomorrow?
Oh, it's already up.
Oh, it is already up. Okay,
you've
already
used that. It's tacky. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I mean, I remember for my years in journalism, there's just something about puns and headlines that we there's a love-hate relationship between journalists and puns. So
I try to avoid them, but this was irresistible.
A few other issues. Child care unionization. That's, again, almost a perennial issue over the past few years. They've been really pushing for this. What's the status of that bill?
Well, it passed out of the Senate right before town meeting day. And it was a four-year battle. The American Federation of Teachers and child care union providers around the state have been trying to get this thing passed for a long time. Lawmakers had a lot of qualms about it, not least of which was the potential impact on some private providers who had no interest in this union bill, because everyone will be included in the collective bargaining arrangement. And so that was upsetting for some people. But now it has to go back to the House. And if it passes, and the governor has said he will sign it, then It will allow child care providers to essentially bargain with the state for a higher subsidy rate. And the subsidy rate has not been increased since 2008. Mm, okay. So it's been a long time.
Okay. I think we're going to quickly turn to one caller, Rich in Starksboro. You were on the Vermont Conversation. We just have a few minutes left. Rich, what's on your mind?
Hi. Well, first I'd like to say I appreciate you having Ann Galloway on, and I really appreciate here in VT Digger segments with Lee Cattell on WDV. It's really a good part of the WDV's broadcasts from my perspective, and I really appreciate the work VT Digger is doing. But I wanted to follow up with some of the conversation relating to the GMO and the risk of lawsuit and inability to successfully defend a lawsuit sort of thing. And then I think it sort of ties in with the inability to have a law for the plastic bags. I wouldn't think the Vermont grocers would be in favor of it. I mean, but anyway, I just want to pass on another piece of this. I was at the Maple Sugars annual banquet and meeting up at the farm show, and the Secretary of Agriculture spoke, and one of the topics brought up was the law against putting the word maple into products that don't really have any maple in them and such. And we have a law on the books, and the Secretary of Agriculture flat said that I've only got one lawyer and we can't do anything about this law. We can't enforce it. So I it's kind of discouraging that we, you know, we're kind of taken over by the business seems to have the upper hand on this whole thing. Just comments I wanted to share.
Rich, I appreciate that. It sounds like you're concerned that powerful interests can sometimes scare or bully the legislature and the state into taking or not taking certain positions. Is that right?
Exactly. And I wouldn't expect the Independent Grocers Association to be in favor of any kind of a bill like that. You know, just like, you know, people aren't in favor of having their taxes raised, but we always seem to lose, you know?
Yeah.
It's so true, Rich. I mean, thank you for your very kind comments about VT Digger. And I think it really is important to point out that sometimes business interests really do have a powerful impact on what happens in the legislature, and it for Vermonters who care about the democratic process, it is discouraging.
Okay, Rich, thank you very much for listening. Ann Galloway, I want to thank you very much for coming on and risking life and limb out there in the snowstorm today. Any 30 seconds? Any last words on the legislative session this year?
Well, we didn't talk about gun control.
We didn't talk about gun control. You have 30 seconds. Can you sum it up?
It's all in the fee bill.
Okay, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure, as always. I want to move over to Russ Ellick, who's on the phone. Russ is my colleague over at VBSR. He's the program assistant with the organization. Russ, are you there?
I'm here, Dan. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Excellent show today. Thank you very much for kind of updating everybody. I think even sometimes your coworkers don't realize all that's going on in the State House, so really appreciate today's show.
So I'm hearing you think I should replace David Goodman each week, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think we do need to keep this as truly the Vermont conversation. One thing that I do enjoy about the format of the show is that we can cover all sorts of different things, and a lot of it tends to relate to how to do business in a socially responsible manner. And so certainly part of what you do is important, but we need you in the State House, not in the radio station every week.
I appreciate that, Russ. Now, we have just a few minutes left on the show, and I think you're going to tell us about an upcoming get-together that VBSR is hosting.
Yeah, so we are really excited about this next networking get-together that we have. It's hosted by Truex Collins, who's been a great VBSR member for a long time, and they're actually going to host it at Top Notch Resort, where they recently helped complete a large renovation. So it's going to be a great time, 2 weeks from tonight, 5:30 p.m. at Top Notch.
And I hear there'll be live jazz music at this event?
Yeah, you know, Truex Collins has really been just a great partner on this get-together. They seem to be pulling out all the stops. It's going to be live jazz by Audrey Bernstein, but they've also put together some drawings, and we have some raffles for VBSR members who pre-register. They've worked to put together amazing hors d'oeuvres, a socially responsible cocktail. We still don't have very many more details on what that is going to be exactly, but it's interesting.
I'm really intrigued by that.
Yeah, and then they've also worked with Top Notch to give VBSR members 35% off of room stay. If you want to network the night away, you'll have a place to do it.
Fantastic. And so if someone wants more information on this event or they want to attend, how do they go about doing that?
Just go to vbsr.org, and it's right there on the homepage, very easy to find. And we'd love to have anybody who's interested in, you know, the triple bottom line approach to business, come on out. It's a free event for anybody to attend.
Fantastic. And I believe you also want to talk a little bit about our upcoming spring conference in May, right?
Yeah, you know, the spring conference is really VBSR's largest event of the year, and it's really sort of one of our signature events where we really strive to help educate people on what social responsibility is and how we can incorporate it into our business. And so this is coming up on May 14th, and we are in what we call full-on conference crunch mode right now. So we are taking proposals for workshops. We're have a call for sponsors out. We're also taking exhibitors' information down for this event. There's going to be 300 attendees at the UVM Davis Center, 10 to 15 workshops, 30-plus exhibitors. So it's a really exciting event, and again, vbsr.org. where you can find all the info you need on it.
Great, and I believe registration for that event begins sometime in early April, right?
Yeah, we're shooting for first week of April to really to open the doors. It takes a lot to get ready for registration. So April is when you can VBSR members will be able to be checking their email and finding those invitations.
Great. Now, Russ, I'm hearing the music. I think our show is wrapping up, so you have just a few seconds left. Anything else you wanted to add?
No, stay tuned. We have an exciting keynote to announce, but can't quite give the details, so I do encourage people to check the website early and often for this announcement that we'll have out in the next week or so.
Great. Thank you, Russ. And this has been the Vermont Conversation on WDEV. I'm your host, Dan Barlow. I'll see you next time.
You have been listening to the Vermont Conversation with host David Goodman. Tune in next Wednesday when once again, Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and its over 1,000 VBSR members, along with Fairpoint Communications, small business owners make it big with Fairpoint, National Life Insurance for more than 150 years working for a better tomorrow, People's United Bank, find out what know-how can do, and Fletcher Allen Healthcare, in service to patient, community, and medicine since 1879, as well as Business Energy Action, challenging businesses to reduce energy consumption. It's just good business. These all help to bring you David Goodman with this special program.
Locally owned and operated, 96.1 WDEV, FM in Warren, FM 96.5 in Barrie, AM 550 WDEV.
I'm Tim McGuire. A massive explosion brings down two apartment buildings in New York City. Marlene.